The section of scripture which will be the focus of our meditation today is a portion of the epistle reading from Romans chapter 8, specifically verses 15 through 17. And I read the first part of that. For you have not received a spirit of slavery leading to fear again, but you have received a spirit of adoption as sons, by which we cry out, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself bears witness with our spirit that we are indeed the children of God. I think my favorite time of the day is in the late afternoon when I'm returning home from work. And it's not just because my work day is done, but it's because of the welcoming party that awaits me at my home. My two young sons, Ethan, who's 2, and Benjamin, who's 11 months, are usually waiting at the door. And as soon as they catch glimpse of their father, they start jumping up and down. Benjamin will be shouting, da, 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 da. And Ethan, my 2-year-old, will be crying, Daddy, Daddy. And it warms my heart. It is a joy and privilege to be able to hear that word, Daddy. It's also a joy and a privilege to be able to speak that word, Daddy. My wife's parents, a couple of years ago, did a mission trip in Latvia in Eastern Europe. And they did this at an orphanage. For a couple of weeks, they served these orphans. And as their stay there was drawing to a close, one of the young boys who had become very close to my father-in-law approached him. And with sincerity in his voice, he said, Would you be my daddy? Just about broke the heart of my father-in-law. You see, more than anything else, he dreamed of being able to speak the word daddy to someone who would be indeed his father. It is a privilege and a joy to be able to say that word, Daddy. And our text here tells us that we as Christians have that privilege and joy, that we can approach the all-powerful creator of the universe and say, Daddy! The term in our text is Abba. But it simply is the Aramaic word that's translated into our English as daddy. It's the words of affection of a young child to his father. However, our text also indicates that this was not always our right. In verse 15, it states, For you have not received a spirit of slavery leading to fear again. And the operative word there is again, meaning at one time we were indeed slaves living in fear. Now, this concept of slavery would have been very familiar to the people to whom Paul was writing, the Romans. Slavery was a very common institution. In fact, scholars estimate that in the middle of the first century, about the time that this epistle was written, there were over 400,000 slaves in Rome, over 1/3 of the city's population. And quite likely, many of those to whom Paul was writing, the Christians of the Church of Rome, were slaves as well. Roman law held that slaves possessed virtually no rights. They were the chattel, the property of their masters. And the masters could use them, abuse them, dispose of them, treat them savagely. No wonder a slave would live in fear. However, our text here, when it speaks of slavery, is not speaking of economic or social slavery. Instead, it's speaking of spiritual slavery, a much more significant kind of bondage. Just 2 chapters before chapter 8, it identified that slavery as a slavery to the tyranny of sin. one chapter before. It's slavery to the condemnation of the law. And just before our text in chapter 8, it says that we are slaves to what Paul calls the flesh. That is, our sinful nature with its desires and passions. That's our original state, slavery to sin and the sinful nature, and thus under the condemnation of God's holy law for that sin. Meaning that our sentence, our destiny, is none other than the most savage punishment and treatment for our iniquity. We, too, lived in fear as slaves. But the wondrous announcement of our text today is that we no longer live as slaves. That no longer is our status or identity before God. Instead, we are sons, sons of God, sons of the Father. Listen again to our text. For you have not received a spirit of slavery leading to fear again, but you have received a spirit of adoption as sons, by which we cry out, Abba, Father. The Spirit Himself bears witness with our spirit that we are indeed the children of God. We have received the spirit of adoption as sons. Now, also, this concept of adoption would be very familiar to the recipients of this letter, the Romans, because adoption was a common practice in Rome. And it resulted in two benefits. First of all, the one who was adopted had his past life, his past status eliminated. All of his debts were canceled. And secondly, he received the rights and privileges in full of the family. He was considered as absolutely a son of the Father as a natural born son, which included the rights to the inheritance. Yes, the Romans knew about adoption, but they really knew about adoption only within their own classes. Very rarely would you find someone from a higher class adopting a person from a lower class. And it's unheard of to have an adoption of a slave into an upper class. In fact, I searched in a number of my ancient history books, Roman history, I couldn't find a single example. Before the service today, I checked with our resident expert in ancient history, classical history, Dr. Wesselschmidt, and I asked him, are you aware of any time in which a slave was adopted into a higher class? And he couldn't think of any. The only example that I can think of that is not in history, but in fiction, in that classic novel Ben-Hur, which was made into a classic movie. If you've seen the movie, you recall the main character, Judah Ben-Hur. He was of high standing, but then he's framed for a crime and sentenced to a life of slavery as an oarsman on the galley of a Roman warship. But in a battle, his ship is rammed by the enemy ship and begins sinking. He becomes free of his shackles and has the opportunity to escape. But instead, he risks his life and rescues the admiral of the Roman fleet who happened to be on that ship. And as a result, the admiral, in gratitude, adopts Judah Ben-Hur as his own son. And immediately, through this adoption, Ben-Hur is elevated from slave status to nobility, to the highest class in Roman society, the patrician class. Immediately, he is made an heir of the vast estate of this Roman admiral. That's fiction. But our text is talking about fact. Fact of those who are adopted out of slavery into the family of highest royalty, God's family. The big difference between our adoption and that of Judah Ben-Hur, however, is that he was adopted due to his own merit, because he rescued the one who would later adopt him. Oh, but the reverse is true for us. We have been adopted not because of our own merit, but solely because of the merit of him who rescued us, who not only risked his life for us, but gave his life for us, sacrificed it on the cross, God himself in human flesh. He redeemed us from the auction block of slavery, not with gold or silver, but with his holy, precious blood and his innocent suffering and death. And why? That I might be his own, that I might be his child, that I might be in his family. And as Paul says here, that I might even be his heir. In verse 17, Paul continues, "And if we are children, we are heirs also, heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ." According to Roman law, an adoptive son shared equally with the natural sons in the inheritance. And Paul here says that we are fellow heirs with Christ. Christ, if you will, natural Son of God. We are adopted sons. And yet we share in his inheritance, the inheritance of his kingdom, of his righteousness, of his glory. And with such a wonderful gift as this, what is our response? We don't earn it. We don't deserve it. We simply affirm it. We affirm it by crying out to God, "Abba, Father, Daddy," because he is. Martin Luther, who we remember today, certainly acutely understood and felt the slavery to sin and the condemnation of the law. But in what is commonly called his evangelical discovery, which was really God's revelation to him of his gracious act in Jesus Christ, Luther saw that he was liberated from that slavery, that he was a child of God, loved and forgiven. His debt was canceled. And he couldn't help but hold that message in. He commended it to the world, and it became what we call the Reformation. Luther writes on this single word, Abba, these words. "This is but a little word, Abba, yet it comprehends all things. Although I am oppressed with anguish and terror on every side, and seem to be forsaken and utterly cast away from God's presence, yet I am his child. He is my father for Christ's sake. I am beloved because of the beloved. Wherefore, this little word, Abba, conceived effectually in the heart, passes all the eloquence of Demosthenes, Cicero, and the most eloquent rhetoricians that ever were in the world." Indeed, that little child's acclamation, Abba, Daddy, is the most eloquent word because of what it conveys about our status before God. And what a privilege and what a joy it is for us to be able to acclaim God as Abba, Father. I have a pastor friend, a Lutheran pastor, who, believe it or not, grew up in Nazareth in Palestine. In fact, he's Palestinian. Another amazing fact is that he grew up in a Jewish neighborhood. And he recalls when he was a child, in the late afternoons, the Jewish fathers coming home to their children and homes and families. and the little Jewish children rushing out to greet their fathers. And he recalls what they would cry out. Abba, ba! Abba, ba! In the Hebrew, Daddy's come. Daddy's come. We too have the great joy and privilege of crying out, Abba, ba! Our Daddy has come. Through Jesus Christ and His grace to adopt us into His family, that we might call out to God, Abba, Father.